This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. I'm out of town this week, so we're doing some replays. The first is a really great interview I did with alderperson from the 8th Ward, Kara Spencer. Let's get into it. So first things first, tell me a little bit about yourself. When you were a kid, what kind of stuff interested you? And did you ever see yourself getting into politics?
Well, no, I never saw myself getting into politics. I guess as a kid, I was really, I played soccer. I was pretty typical, St. Louis kid. I did a lot of searching for rocks and creeks and playing with my friends, played softball and that sort of thing. Maybe a bit of a tomboy to some extent, but just pretty typical childhood. I didn't even study political science. It was really never on my radar. I went to Truman State University and studied mathematics and went to the field of mathematics following my university training and really kind of came into politics almost on a whim. Mm.
So you said you went to school for mathematics. Mm-hmm. How do politics and mathematics intersect, if they do at all?
Oh, gosh, they intersect a lot. I mean, I think mathematics really intersects with every aspect of life. I mean, there's so much, logic and thinking and critical analysis that's important in everyday life. But certainly when it comes to making political decisions, I'm currently the chair of the budget committee. So going through this year's budget, understanding finances, I mean, a critical part of critical role for a municipal government really is to have an economic development plan, a plan for the future for the city to make sure that we have taxes that can cover the services that our citizens want, demand, and deserve. Understanding the mathematics, the finances, the numbers behind those things is really important.
So you said you got into politics kind of on a whim. Can you lead me up to that point? Like, what was the driving force behind, like, okay, I'm going to do it?
Sure. Well, I got involved in my neighborhood. And at the time, I just kind of felt like there was a little bit of a disconnect between the community and the representative. Of course, I've come to have a different, I think, perspective. But, at the time, thinking about the hurdles involved in, putting together festivals like Cinco de Mayo, up until the 8th Ward, I represented the 20th Ward, which was just along Cherokee Street and the neighborhood south of there, and seeing so much disinvestment in those communities over time, really started to kind of work within the community I was part of to think about how could we do things differently? What are the hurdles here? We had a liquor moratorium that really prevented bars and restaurants in the community from opening up, which makes, without selling alcohol, makes it very, very difficult to run a restaurant. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of interest in wanting to step up and run for public office at that time. This was, ten years ago. And so I just really decided, you know, heck, I'm going to do it. I'm complaining about it. You know, I had enough interest and a little bit of a financial cushion. I suppose there was some luck there on my end, but decided to just, you know, hit the pavement and knocked on every single door in that ward that spring and convinced people that I could do a better job.
You actually knocked on my door right after you got elected to the 8th. And that really impressed me because I just feel like you don't see that happen as much. It felt very old school and very connected to the community. How important is that connection to you?
Oh, it's critically important. I mean, especially, you know, switching wards like I did, you know, from the 20th to the 8th, but even running for re-election in the 20th ward, knocking on those doors is really the key piece to give you the tactile feeling of what is important to the community you represent. You know, just knowing, hearing over and over again, the trash, the quality of the streets, those things that are important to people, really drive it home what it is that as the local elected official I should be focusing on. And I, you know, it's a little daunting. I mean, it's a little, can be a little rote and a little bit repetitive because the issues are so pervasive, you know, they're so common. But I truly do love it. And it is something that is very, very important, not only to winning an election, but to serving well.
So let's talk a little bit about being a public servant in the city of St. Louis. I feel like most of us are connected to national politics. And you see these politicians, it seems like they have an agenda. Maybe they're not listening to their constituents that much, but it's like, here's the culture war issue of the day. How much do you balance what you would like to accomplish with what you hear from people? And, you know, like, how do you balance that out and come to your vision of what you want to do?
Sure. I mean, if I had my, you know, I mean, you know, it is tough to balance those things, but I do try to get back to folks on a pretty regular basis, daily if I can, with concerns, with, you know, from everything from a dumpster that needs to be replaced to a pothole to the really big issues like regulating Airbnb and other things. I think it's really, really important to balance both leadership and driving an agenda that kind of transcends and what you are elected to do, you know, to provide some leadership and really to react and be responsive to the everyday needs of our citizens. So it is a tough balance, but it's one I think that's really critical to doing the job well. And I enjoy trying to find that middle ground there.
How has your day-to-day changed since the alderperson spot has become a full-time thing and it's expanded?
Sure. Well, the big thing is that it is full time. And so, you know, I did leave a job at a local bank to do this full time when I was elected to the 8th ward. And so my day to day, you know, it does allow me to focus on this role, which is really nice. You know, we have a lot of nighttime meetings after, you know, evening and weekend obligations. You know, I think I have, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 regular monthly meetings of some kind, whether it's a neighborhood association or business association. So that takes me, you know, out of the home, you know, almost half the evenings of the week. And so to be able to balance that and kind of, you know, during the day, find time to do other things is really, really important. And it's given me an opportunity to really focus on the issues.
How do you, so I'm always fascinated when someone has a job like you do, where you kind of have to be on all the time and ready to go. How do you get yourself in the zone every day?
I don't know. I just sort of wake up in it. I really do love this job. So it's not like I have to fight to get in the zone. I find myself when I go out of town or on vacation, just answering emails. I try not to answer them all, but, you know, finding, I'm just, you know, very, very curious about what's going on. You asked about the culture wars and that sort of thing. And those big issues, those national issues are important to me as a human being. But honestly, the local issues, the municipal government issues, these are the things that drive me, making our government work better here locally. You know, I think there's a lot of value to talking about some of those bigger issues. But I truly believe a municipal government should be focused on the core responsibilities of a municipal government. And getting too far outside of that means we're going to fail at the things that we need to be doing. And so it's critically important to me to focus on those things that may not be the sexiest, may not get the biggest headlines, but your trash pickup, you know, the how we're going to pave streets and how we're going to really invest the limited amount of infrastructure dollars that we have and how we're going to refocus and recenter our city, our region into our downtown and the areas that really need to be strengthened to have a strong regional economy. Because at the end of the day, we're really not performing. You know, in the last census, I was looking at the numbers just randomly last night. You know, out of 798 cities, we're 797. You know, as far as growth goes, we've lost almost 3% of our population in the last 2 years in a row. That is an unprecedented population and tax base loss here in the city of St. Louis. And if you live in St. Charles, you may not think that that's super important to you. But if we don't have a strong regional core, we are going to continue to stagnate as a region for decades to come. And this is going to be a real problem, not only for us today, but for our children, our grandchildren, and for the future, the viability of St. Louis as a threat. Community.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of the Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different, good different. Try something that feels like you, you know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
So in your opinion, what's our biggest obstacle keeping us from performing?
I think doing the job seriously of our city government. I mean, I really think we have an incredible and unprecedented set of assets here in the city of St. Louis. Our history, our culture, the location being on, I mean, being on the largest river in the United States. I get goosebumps every single time I talk about how incredible the asset portfolio of St. Louis is. It really is unprecedented. Cities that are growing like Nashville would kill to have the built environment, a railway exchange building like we have here in St. Louis, a national monument in the heart of downtown, which has seen an incredible amount of investment around there. You know, as far as the grounds of the arch themselves. But we have, you know, failed in many ways to capitalize on those things. Our riverfront, by by many city standards is dead. And we haven't revitalized and brought people down to those assets in a way that is regular beyond just the games and the concerts and things like that. We need to have a bustling downtown community, that core that we can center around, rally around, that people from around the nation, around the world can point to as the center of our community.
What do you think we're lacking downtown? Like, if you could snap your fingers and, hey, this is what we need, this is where the vacancy is, what would you do?
I mean, I think really the perception of crime and safety, and some of that is reality. You know, there has been some real, I think, impressive work done by volunteer organizations looking at policing per capita, per crime in our downtown area, getting serious about addressing some of those quality of life issues. I mean, we have Airbnbs running amok. We have traffic and, you know, cruising and violence. I think that, you know, the gun proliferation in our communities has been a really big problem. I'm really proud to be part of reining in the open carrying of firearms early this year. I think it's making a big difference in the scene weapons in our downtown and in our neighborhoods, which is making a difference. But, you know, those perceptions are really important. But I also think that just having, you know, I would love to see food trucks, vendors, regular opportunities to eat, drink and have a good time on our riverfront. I'm really impressed with some of the organization around the landing and the work that's been going on there. I'm looking forward to a few, you know, new spots coming in this fall, which I think will just really help to revitalize what is the entertainment district closest to our national monument. And it's a really important one.
So turning to social media for a second, I was looking at your Twitter account in prepping for the interview, and you are by no means a flamethrower, but I did see you get into the mix a couple of times. I'm just curious, when do you choose to ignore and when do you choose to engage when people are coming after you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, typically tend to ignore because it's too much to kind of engage with on a regular basis. And I think it takes your kind of focus off what I should be doing anyway, which is working with real people and not Twitter trolls. But I do choose to engage when I think it's of value. You know, I mean, when there's I withstand a lot of accusations and falsehoods, but at some point, you know, there's just a breaking point. But I think it's really important to make sure that I'm only engaging in a way that I think moves the dialogue forward. You know, I try not to engage in anything personal. Sometimes it's a matter of clearing up the record or just, you know, putting my foot down once in a while. But you know, for the most part, I try to stay above the fray.
Do you ever feel like a political target?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, certainly I think I am a political target. But, you know, I think that comes with a job. I don't let it bother me too much. I think one of the things I kind of like to use as a gauge is if it's bothering me too much, then, you know, I may think it's time to look the other way and kind of try to redirect energy and focus in more productive and constructive ways.
So you're a single mom. How do you balance that with being an older person?
Oh, well, I have a 12-year-old. My son, Sai, goes to McKinley Middle School here in the city of St. Louis. And so, that 7 a.m. drop-off time is right in the middle of workout hour for me. So that's tough. But, you know, I have really great parents. My mom, Patty, and my dad, Bob, who live in the area, help out a tremendous amount. They pick Sai, my son, up from school most days. We have other friends with whom he goes home from school sometimes. So it takes a village. I'm lucky to have a good support system and a really, really, really understanding kid who gets involved and engaged and is just kind of naturally curious about what I do and the world around him.
So it's easy to focus on everything that's going wrong in St. Louis. What are we getting right? What are we just killing right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I think a lot of things are going really well. You know, we have got a tremendous amount of energy through the Central Corridor, like I said, with the soccer stadium. I'm excited to see some of the development around NGA. You know, the Good Development Group down here along the landing, just south of the arch along the Shoto's landing is really, really exciting. I think we're getting some of those things right. And I think, too, you know, kind of I don't agree with everything that the Board of Aldermen is doing, maybe the sort of extreme nature of things. But I do think that kind of trying to, think about things differently is a good thing and kind of focusing on, at least trying to get some policy done, I think is a good thing. So I think we're getting those things right. You know, I would like to see us focus on, you know, 5-10 year plans that look like which streets we're going to pave and how we're going to get, you know, how we're going to make sure that we have enough trash trucks and the actual infrastructure we need to get things done. So I'd kind of like to, you know, shift some of that energy into maybe more boring, but certainly more day-to-day governance activity.
Kind of practical things that anyone can point at and say like, oh, they got that done for us.
Absolutely. I mean, those are things that I think are the bread and butter of a city government, and we've got to get those things right. So, but, you know, there's a lot going for St. Louis right now. You know, there's certainly, we are culinary, you know, the restaurants that are opening, it's just amazing some of the things that's really going on in the undercurrent, the musicians. I mean, I'm going out, you know, once a week to see a live music show and really, really enjoying being a part of, you know, just regular St. Louis.
So this is my final question, Kara. What are you most proud of in your political career so far? And can you I guess it's a two-pronged question. And can you share with us your next big goal?
Well, I don't know that I have one big one. I'm certainly really proud of fighting the privatization of the airport. But, you know, shifting wards, you know, I get calls every single day from several, lots of residents, but many of my old 20th ward residents, and helping people that don't otherwise have access to government, helping them figure out and navigate the simple things of life, and having that, you know, reaffirmation that, you know, people still continue to call me. Being reelected with 70-80% of the vote is just such an incredible feeling. And a lot of it is policy oriented, but a lot of it's just, you know, the relationships you build over time and being able to serve people in a way that makes their lives better. So I'm really proud of that, and I really love doing it. My next big step, you asked?
Yes, please.
Well, I'm going to continue to serve. I mean, I think there's going to be some, opportunities in the future, but right now my focus really is getting through this legislative session, getting some of the big things done, the gun legislation we passed this summer. But, you know, the other things that we're working on are really important to me. And I think as far as other big things go, we'll be taking a look at those early this spring.
Kara Spencer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, of course. It was fun to be here.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rachel Zimmerman Show. Now on with our replays for our Best Of show this week. This next interview is with Andy Karanzif. He's the owner of Crown Candy Kitchen.
I'm Andy Karanzif, owner of Crown Candy Kitchen. I have been doing this for the last 40-something years in our family business. Crown Candy was established in 1913 by my grandfather, Harry. It was just a candy store, an ice cream store at one point, and then in the 20s, my grandfather put food in there also. So that is where we, you know, become a kind of threefold business where we're ice cream, candy, and a restaurant. My grandfather retired due to health reasons in 1951. My father took it over then. I had two older brothers, Mike, who passed away almost 11 years ago now. And then my brother Tom, who's retired, he retired to take care of my mother, who was sick with dementia. She recently passed in January.
Sorry.
Thank you. But now it is myself, my wife, Sherry, and then I've got a couple nieces that are working for us now. So we still have a family connection. I've got a few people that have been there for 15, 20, 25 years. So we are all kind of family. So it's been a family business on that corner for 110 years. And we live upstairs, Sherry and I do, so it's lovely not to have to drive to work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even when I'm not at work, I'm at work, so that's always a little bit of a challenge for me sometimes. But, yeah, my brothers and I took it over in 91. We've run it ever since, and it just has fallen into my lap. I'm the youngest, so it is a great joy to do this. And it is also very stressful and very hard sometimes, especially in today's world.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't do anything different. And, you know, we're not going nowhere. We're staying right in that corner. We're not moving. That's where we belong. This is our neighborhood. And, you know, this is just who we are.
So it's obviously heavily a family business. Did you always know this is what you would end up doing? Or did you ever think about doing anything else?
Well, I spent 6 months at Florissant Valley drinking Diet Dr. Pepper and eating cheese fries and pretending I was going to college. And I realized, no, this isn't going to work for me. So I thought I took the easy way out and went to work down at the store. It was great. You know, I was young and, you know, got to work and made some decent money and, you know, kind of could do whatever I wanted. And then, you know, over the years, responsibility and you kind of all of a sudden the light bulb comes on and you realize that this is really important and you really have to be in it. So, you know, I've had a few aha moments in my life where I realized how important Crown Candy is to our family, but how much more important it is to the community mm-hmm. that we're in. So it's like I said, it's a great pleasure to do this and enjoy. But there's some days when I just want to run away and go live on an island somewhere.
You talk about that aha moment. Do you think that's common for people who work in restaurants? Like they just kind of get into it and then they fall in love with it at a certain point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a hard industry. I don't care if you're working for, you know, a family business or a corporate, you know, a chain or whatever. This to be in this business, you've really got to be dedicated to it. And you've got to love it because if you wake up one day and you realize this isn't for you, then you need to move on and go find whatever your passion is, because we have so many highs, but we also have so many lows when we do this. You know, the long days, the long nights, you know, the difficult customers, the difficult employees, the difficult bosses. But that's the bad part. You know, the joys of it. You know, I get so much, you know, it makes me so happy when I'm working and I have, you know, a lady that's been coming into our store for 50 or 60 or 70 years. And she tells me, this is the neighborhood I grew up in. This is my first job. Your grandfather or father gave me this job. Wow. And I'm so glad you're still here. And that's what really kind of, that can wash away all the bad stuff in a heartbeat. It just, it makes it all worthwhile to have these stories, you know, and that's what we're all about is, you know, being there for everybody and being consistent and taking care of people.
So you've been doing this for over 40 years. How is the restaurant different from when you started? And what do you think's the biggest difference post-COVID?
So the business has obviously increased over the years. You know, it used to be strictly, we were open to 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, we had people living down there. You had people working downtown. You had people going downtown for a lot of stuff. And that is one thing that has really changed over the last few years is that after 5 o'clock at night, there's hardly anything going on. There's no draw for people to come downtown. And it hurts because, you know, we used to have a good, thriving nighttime business, but it's just not viable anymore. Mm. Part of that problem also is the fact that we don't have enough employees. I need to hire two people. We've been trying for 6 months and we get interviews, but nobody shows up. So, and we're all in that same boat. We're all struggling to find employees. Doesn't matter what industry you're in, you know, it's just a different world. And people want to blame COVID and maybe that's part of it. But I think there's a lot of factors that are involved in that. It's just, the world has changed the way we do business, the way people earn money. It just has made things a little bit more interesting for all of us. I go back to thinking about my father when he ran the place. And I was a teenager, and he would have all these business people come in, and he'd have all the politicians come in, and he'd have all the movers and shakers would come in for lunch, and they'd go back and visit my dad, and you know, they'd have these conversations, and I would, you know, get to listen and to see, you know, how my father was working in the room and making friends and taking care of people. So that's where I think I get a lot of it from my dad is, you know, you got to take care of your customers. You got to take care of everybody, whether they're really important or whether they're just, you know, the guy that lives down the street or the mom who lives down the street. You take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. You treat them all the same. But it's definitely a harder business since COVID. Like I said, we're struggling with, you know, employees. Getting people to come downtown is a little bit of a struggle now for us all because people have a perception. You go to the city, it's bad. Is it bad? Well, I can't deny it sometimes when you guys are reporting on how many homicides were happened over the weekend. So that's hard to defend that. But it's also a great place. There's great people there. There's great architecture. There are great businesses down here. And, you know, we're all fighting the good fight. And we all choose to be here. So, you know, that's like when people ask me, why don't you move? Why don't you go out to Chesterfield or St. Charles County? You'll do so much better. I said, no, this is our home. This is, you know, this neighborhood didn't give up on us and we won't give up on it.
Take me through a typical morning opening up the restaurant.
Well, I'm an early riser. So, you know what, 4:30, 5 o'clock, I'm up, feed the dogs, make a cup of coffee, get downstairs, get everything turned on, start waiting for my deliveries. And for the most part, they're all on time, but occasionally there's hiccups. It depends. I mean, depending on what time of year it is, I could be getting the chocolate machine cranked up right now and get ready to start making chocolate pumpkins and witches and turkeys and getting all that chocolate going for the holiday season. But you never know, because this morning I came in with that intention and I have to be working in the kitchen today because we're short two people. So that means I get to go in the kitchen. So, but it, you do what you got to do. I can be down there and be making ice cream. I could be making chocolate syrup. I can be making hot fudge. There's plenty of things to do. Just, you know, getting things cleaned up and ready to go, getting things prepped, waiting for my employees to show up and getting them in and getting them going and, you know, pumping them up for the day, you know, because that's part of the, it's part of the process. You got to take care of everybody, you know, take care of your employees, and, you know, they're important. Without them, we don't go. We might be the vehicle, but they're the engine that drives us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the security cameras, because I follow you on Twitter and you'll often post video of what's going on in the intersection outside of Crown Candy and the, you know, people blowing past the stop sign. What made you decide to put those cameras up? What made you decide to start posting?
The cameras are just kind of a natural thing, unfortunately, that now we put them up just because for security for our customers, for my employees, and for the business. I don't know how much good they do, because I don't know how much people really care about if they're on camera nowadays or not, because obviously, you know, people do dumb stuff and they get caught on camera all the time. I put them up just for that reason. And then it just dawned on me, I don't know how many years ago when I started doing this, that I'm going to take this video off of the security footage, and I'm going to post this, you know, this knucklehead that's going 50 or 60 miles an hour down St. Louis Avenue and blowing through the stop signs with no regard for anybody else. And it's just kind of taken on a life of its own where, you know, I've had people passing on the wrong side of the road. I've had people passing in the parking lane. I've had, you know, crashes in that intersection. Thankfully, nobody got seriously hurt in any of those, you know, those instances. So now I actually have to have a standard now, because if they're going too slow through the stop sign, nobody wants to see that. They want to see the people going 40 or 50 or 60 miles an hour driving like a real idiot. So if I get information from my employees who text me random times, like 2:32 red car, I'll go find it on the video and I'll post it. And it gets a lot of attention, but it's also kind of sad because it's kind of the state of our world. I mean, we don't own that. The city of St. Louis doesn't own it. There's bad drivers everywhere. It's just, I'm fortunate or unfortunate to have cameras out there to capture them.
And you've petitioned for change, but it hasn't happened yet.
No, I have, you know, ask, and, you know, I would love to have, whether it's speed humps or bump out curbs or flashing stop signs or something, to just kind of help, you know, reduce the amount of people driving like knuckleheads. But so far I've gotten a lot of, we're working on it. And I've got nothing really to show from it. So I just kind of, you know, carry on and see what happens, and just keep going about taking care of what I can take care of.
It's a very positive attitude.
You have to. I mean, we all, like I said, we have our highs and lows here. And I walk out the door some mornings and there's a bar a block away from us, and, you know, they might have a good busy night and they're good neighbors. So, you know, I don't have any issue with them. But unfortunately, I come out and their cars of their patrons have been broken into. So I see broken glass, and I see, you know, it just makes me sad. I see the uncut grass. I see the, you know, the buildings that aren't being taken care of, and it wears you down. It just, you know, I've always wanted to be an optimist, but sometimes I'm also a realist. It's like, you know, we didn't fall apart overnight. We're not going to get fixed overnight. It's not this mayor's fault. It's not the last mayor's fault. It's just something has happened to the city where I guess we got a little bit apathetic and we got used to the decline and the decay. And, you know, we fight the fight and people are trying to do what they can. But I see some neighborhoods like Soulard and the Hill, they get speed humps and they get, you know, the streets repaved. And then I see our neighborhood and, you know, we've got overgrown grass and vacant lots that look, you know, terrible. And I think, well, this is what kind of message does this send? when people come from out of town to us, because we're a destination for a lot of tourists, so this is the takeaway they take. They might come down and have a great lunch and a fabulous time, but then they leave and they drive past all of this. And these corridors are important. It leaves an impression on people. It's like, oh, my God, we went to this great place, but it was in this awful area. And I'm just like, that's not exactly a ringing endorsement. So we struggle with that. But I'm fortunate, guess what? People get past it and they still come see us. But I would just like it to be a little bit better for everybody.
When we come back, part two of our interview with Andy Karanzif of Crown Candy Kitchen. Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Now it's time for part two of our interview with Andy Karanzif from Crown Candy Kitchen.
I often see you lifting up other restaurants in St. Louis. How important is that sense of community to you?
Oh, it's huge. All of them, but especially the ones in the city that are fighting the same fight that we're fighting. You know, a lot of these people are my friends, and, you know, we're fortunate that we've got 110 years of history behind us. So I've got a pretty good client or, you know, customer base. So I'm fortunate, even in some downtimes, people will always be there to support us. You know, for some of these places that are new and they're great and they're really cool, you got to put the word out. You've got to get people to come down and patronize them because I want them to succeed. You know, I can remember years ago when people didn't want people to succeed because I want the business. I don't want you to be successful. I want to be the one who's successful. Now, you know, that's one of the greatest things about our St. Louis restaurant community is how we all support each other, how we, you know, we'll collaborate or we'll just, you know, support them by whether it's, you know, going down there and spending money with them or, you know, taking them out and spend, you know, getting them drunk because they had a rough day or just publicizing them, putting them out there. I'm fortunate that I have, you know, a lot of people on Twitter that follow me. So when I tell you this is a good place to go eat, it's a good place to go eat.
We kind of touched on this when you were talking about watching your dad run the restaurant, but what is your philosophy overall when it comes to food and when it comes to service?
Well, I learned it from my father. You give people a good quality product, you take care of those people, and they will come back. So you want to be consistent. And, you know, it used to be the joke is change is a bad thing around Crown's because people want the egg salad to taste exactly like the egg salad always tastes. They want the BLT to be the way it always has been. They want, you know, the chocolate shake to taste the same. So things don't change a whole lot down there. You know, we might tweak things a little bit, but for the most part, it's consistent. And you take care of everybody. You know, like I said, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, they walk through those doors. They came here to give us their hard-earned money. So I want to make sure they have the best experience. I want them to, you know, have good food, good ice cream, good candy, a good experience. And, you know, we do that. And, you know, and that starts with me. It starts with my attitude and how my mood affects everybody. So if I come into work and I'm crabby and grouchy, and I used to be a lot more like that than I am now. Now I'm a little bit more mellow, even though people are probably going to chuckle when they hear that. But you've got to spread the positive energy. So you got to make sure your employees are all in a good place because they're my ambassadors. So they're the ones who are out there in front taking care of my customers. And so it's kind of symbiotic. We need each other. And I'm very fortunate that I have great employees and I'm very fortunate that I have great customers. So this goes back to two simple things, you know, take care of your customers and give them a good quality product.
You talk about kind of mellowing out. Is that something that you think just happened naturally, just living life, or was there something that spurred that on?
I think it just kind of happened. It's just the older I got, the older I get, the smarter my father looks or is. So, you know, you don't take into account some of the stuff they tell you when you're younger because we know everything. But then you realize when you get older that, you know, there's a different way to do things. There's a better way to treat people. There's, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, hard work, but there's also something to be said for taking a step back and maybe giving people an extra day off. That's something we never used to do. We never used to close. Now, obviously, COVID changed that for all of us. But even now, I'll give my employees an extra day off just because I think, you know what, you guys are fried. You've all been working hard. It's time to, you know, take a break, give you an extra day to, you know, recharge, and then get back at it.
Yeah, I saw you tweet around Labor Day that you guys were closing just for the sake of your mental health, and that was just something you needed to do.
Yeah, that's it. I gave them opportunity to have 3 days off. So, and they all, you know, I take a poll and I say, what do you guys want to do? And I think sometimes they're a little afraid to say, we want to close, but they're not no more. Now they appreciate the same thing. You know, it's like, this is a take advantage of it and, you know, do nothing, do something, you know, but just don't come to work and just relax and get ready to go for the next day.
Okay, my final question, Andy. You guys are such a legacy. Tell me about some of the famous people who have come in and some of the coolest things that have happened while you were working.
Well, I mean, probably one of the most famous people was Bill Murray. I think it was back in the early 2000s. They were, probably the late 1990s. They were filming a movie here, Larger Than Life, and they were filming because of the flooding. So I guess it was 93 maybe. And I looked up one day on a Wednesday afternoon and Bill Murray's walking through the front door. And I was like, huh, he's taller than I thought he'd be. And he was real nice. And he came in and, you know, he got a malt and got some candy. And, you know, we talked for a little bit and then off he went. But then he sent his assistant back in and he says, I want to buy malts for the entire staff. And I'm like, cool. How many do you need? He says, about 100. So I spent the next couple hours making 100 malts for the entire crew. So that was one of the cool things that happened. We've had, you know, and back in the good old days when Jerry Berger was alive, he would bring down celebrities. I mean, we had Carol Channing, Tony Curtis, Marvin Hamlisch, a lot of these people that are, you know, they don't recognize those names nowadays, but they were a big deal back then. We've had, you know, the local TV people come in, the radio people come in, you know, politicians come in. You know, I never forget my dad, you know, one time he pointed at a guy and he says, that guy there? I said, yeah. He says, he knows where a lot of bodies are buried. And I do think he meant bodies, but I'm like, interesting that he could have the chief of police in and he could have, you know, the fire chief in, and then he could have, you know, some other people that maybe weren't exactly on the right side of the, but it's just the dichotomy of the people that come into our business. So I appreciate that. More recently, Ina Garten came in. I think that was thanks to Danny Meyer, sent her down to have lunch with us. So she was really nice. One of the biggest ones and coolest ones was having Adam Richmond from Man vs. Food come in. He came in. It was funny. They called us, and it was his first season. They said, we want to do this show, and we're filming people doing this guy doing food challenges. I'm like, sure, whatever. That's great. Come on down. And then they called and said, well, we can't make it. The scheduling's not working. I said, okay, whatever. No big deal. And then they called me like 3 days later and they said, we are coming down. It'll be on, you know, blah, blah, blah this day. And so they just showed up with this film crew right before Christmas when we're really busy. And he came in and tried to drink 5 milkshakes in a half an hour. And he was a really nice guy. The crew was great. My staff loved it. It was, you know, it was exciting for them to meet, you know, I'm be on TV also because they got some airtime. He unfortunately failed. He only drank 4.5 malts because it didn't take my advice. Always drink vanilla. Don't mix up the flavors. Mm-hmm. Just drink. Keep it simple. So then he was leaving after failing, and I gave him a BLT because he looked like death. I said, you're going to be hungry in about a half an hour. Eat this BLT. You'll feel better. 2 years later, I get a phone call. He wants to come back down and film Best Sandwich in America. And, you know, he came in, and once again, he was a great guy. We had a great time. We did not win. We lost to Al's Hot Italian Beef in that episode. But he said that BLT saved my life, and I always knew that if we ever do something else, I'm going to come back and film it. So, you know, I learned that from my father. You take care of people, and maybe it comes back to you, you know, and maybe it doesn't, but it's the right thing to do. Don't get me wrong. I love my free publicity. I love that limelight of, oh, look at the celebrities here, but I also appreciate the guy that works down at the factory that comes by and gets his chili before he goes to work, or the mom who comes in after school with her 2 kids and gets some ice cream cones. That's the reason we're still there. You know, it's not the celebrity factor. It's the everyday person factor that keeps us going.
Well, Andy Candy, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Well,
thank you for having me.
All right, guys, that's the show this week. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram if you don't already, at RachelZSTL. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have an amazing weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year, because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no, so my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.